Today, when a man is arrested for looking at indecent images of children, what happens to his family? And just a warning before we start, in this episode, we do talk about the sexual abuse of children. For Emma, it happened on a Sunday evening in the summer of 2016. Her ex had just dropped the kids off, and then she heard it.
I had a knock on the door, and I thought, oh, he's forgotten something. Opened the door, and there was a plainclothes police lady standing there.
We have changed her name and her voice to protect her identity.
I looked behind her to see my ex surrounded by three men around his car. I was thinking, you know, somebody died, you know, because why else would it so serious? And they wanted to talk to me away from the children. And then the lead officer said, have you told her yet? And she went, sir, I'm getting round to it. Can you give me a minute? And he went, no, we've run out of time. And he looked at me straight in the eyes and said, I'm so sorry. Life is never going to be the same again. And the next few months are going to be hell and there's nothing you can do to avoid it. And then told me that they were arresting my ex-husband for accessing indecent images of children.
This moment of someone being arrested for downloading indecent images of children happens around 850 times a month across England and Wales. This story is about what happens to the families left devastated by it.
It felt like the world dropped out. It was surreal. Because the police are telling you this. So you're like, well, they wouldn't make it up. But then I was like, not the father of my children. He wouldn't do that.
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, the knock and what comes next.
The best way I can describe that knock on the door, and I've really struggled to describe what it's like, but it's like being handed a pair of glasses you didn't know you needed. So with these glasses, I now look back and see my life in a completely different perspective. It's things that I look at now and think, well, were you behaving like that because of what you were doing in secret?
The story we're telling today isn't one I've ever heard before, and there are many reasons for that. It was first told to Harriet Grant, who is a freelance reporter for The Guardian.
So I'd written a few stories about the growth in online child abuse, based a lot on the views and experiences of the police and other agencies. And I think what was really driving me to keep reporting on it was the staggering numbers involved. And it was after I'd done a few stories that I got an email from Emma, and her first line was, please, could you give a voice to the children of child sex offenders? She told me that although she was nervous about reaching out to a journalist, she felt it needed to be done. And the way that she told her story about the events that followed, the decisions she had to make, the impact it had on her, on her children, it's a privilege, really, to be able to talk to someone about that direct experience.
Right, okay.
And then we arranged to meet.
We're recording.
I will just start and we can go. And I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to start with some personal questions.
And are you able to tell us about her and what her life was like when the knock happened?
So Emma told me that she met Ben, and that's not his real name. When she was fairly young, they'd grown up in a town, both of them, and then they'd met.
Go to the classic, like, night out.
She said he seemed a really normal guy. He was funny, he was into the outdoors, and they got married.
And when the knock happened, you were in the process of separating.
Their marriage then broke down, but the reasons for that were just reasons that lots of marriages break down. She felt he wasn't involved enough with the babies. She said, you know, he went out a lot. He wasn't really committed to being a hands-on dad.
I mean, I divorced him for many reasons. This was not on my radar at all.
And she said, by the end of their breakdown, it was fairly amicable.
We just evolved to be housemates raising our children is the best way of wording it, I think.
So when the knock happened, they'd been getting into a rhythm of sharing the children. On the day that it happened, as she said to me, I was getting ready to do the bedtime routine, you know, milk, bath, pajamas.
After the knock, what happened next? Can you take us through those hours?
The children, who were very young, were in front of the telly. She'd come up with what she hoped would be a convincing story and had said to them, the police have to practice searching people's houses, and that's what they came here to do today. And the police began searching the house. They were looking for devices. They took the kids' tablets. They took everything they could find, phones, laptops. Obviously, she found it horribly shocking and embarrassing, them going through her house.
Most of that evening is a blur, to be honest. So they were in my home for about 2.5 hours. I could remember where I was standing, where the police lady was standing in the kitchen.
And while this was happening, the female officer kept her in the kitchen and started to really try and impress on her a bit of what all of this actually meant. And this woman officer looked at her and said,
it's really important you don't tell close friends or family about what happened this evening. There might be vigilante behaviour, such as spray painting your property, scratching your car because your ex-husband once lived here. It's a crime. Yeah, it was really intense.
Did the police tell Emma what her ex-partner was accused of doing?
No, in fact, police don't go into detail at that point, which is one of the things that she describes as being a difficult thing to deal with. You don't have a huge amount of information at the beginning. Obviously, the man hasn't been charged at that point. So they were giving her quite general information. They explained to her there are three categories, A, B and C. A is the most serious type of images. Category A would generally mean penetrative sex of a young person or a child being deliberately hurt. Category B is non-penetrative sexual images of children. And then Emma said, there was one moment that comes back to me now.
Almost like flashback level, I suppose, when she actually described what a category A, category B and category C image was, and they suspected he'd accessed all three levels. That was, you know, I wanted to throw up.
I mean, yeah, I can't imagine at all what this would have been like. You know, you've got police in your home, your kids are there, you've, you know, got this accusation against your ex-partner. You know, at this point, what was Emma thinking about her children? I mean, she must have been worried about them.
I think at this particular point, she was very much focused on, is this possible about this man that I thought I knew so well? She all along has not really feared for her own children having been victims of abuse. That's something she talked to me about a lot. I don't think that was something that leapt out at her at that moment. She was very, very shocked.
What happened after the officers left?
Actually, Emma told me a story that really brought it home to me what an incredibly shocking experience this was for her.
They left, I put my children to bed, and then I sat on my sofa and I had the search warrant in front of me. And then I couldn't remember the name of any of the officers that just searched my home. And then I was like, I couldn't really describe any of them and I freaked myself out. And then I came up with a scenario, and this is the embarrassing bit. I came up with a scenario that I'd just been robbed and I'd just let four people in my home and taken all my electronic devices. So I didn't dial 999 or anything stupid, but I did call my local police station and said, does this lead officer exist? And I'll never forget the tone of voice of this lady on the other end of the phone when she went, yeah, he's a police officer. It's like, okay, thank you, bye. And I felt stupid, but I needed to root myself in something that I knew was real. So in that moment, the concept that my ex-husband accessed indecent images and the concept that I'd just been robbed by four people was equal. It was all, both were like, well, both seemed surreal. It was just so overwhelming. It was really hard.
Harriet, you've been reporting on this moment that Emma describes, which is known as the knock. What does that really mean? What have you found out about it?
Every month, around 850 men are arrested in England and Wales for crimes related to online child sex abuse. So that would be downloading and looking at child abuse, as well as grooming children or sharing images, being a predatory paedophile, reaching out to children. And just to put that in context, in 2010, it was 500 men a year. So 500 men a year to 850 a month. Gosh. And In fact, police deliberately visit the house when other family members are likely to be there, often the end or the beginning of the day, because they want to arrive when everyone who lives in the house is there.
Why is it that the police take this approach? I mean, that feels very harsh on the families of these accused people.
So what the police said, it's actually for safeguarding reasons. They were saying, imagine you suspect that somebody in this house is viewing illegal images of children being abused. You have an IP address, you know very little else. You want to be really sure that firstly, you can see and assess every adult who lives in that house. And if there are children there, those children might be at risk. But what people like Emma are trying to draw attention to is the trauma. And the police are very aware of that as well.
Yeah, huge numbers then being affected because these arrests are on the increase. Why is that?
Essentially, if you want to look at it, child abuse is a few clicks away. That's the words of a very senior police officer, Ian Critchley, who leads on child abuse for the National Police Chiefs Association. And what he was saying is the internet has facilitated the abuse of children. This isn't the dark web in many cases. It is on openly available sites. And around the world, people can find each other, affirm each other's interest as acceptable and share images of children being abused, and that happens very easily.
Somebody sat on a computer has to see a child being abused. You know, that is the fundamental issue here. And wherever that is in the world, we want to stop that taking place in the first place.
In terms of why there is more images of children being abused on the internet, sadly, predatory adults can now reach children over the internet, find children in their own bedrooms through websites with chat functions or live stream capacity. They can groom them to share abusive images of themselves. It's known as self-generated abuse. As one officer said, we watch videos of girls being abused and you can hear their parents calling them down to dinner in the background.
Oh, God.
And then, obviously another thing driving arrests is technology, meaning that offenders like Ben can be tracked to their home.
I mean, who are the people being arrested in these cases, Harriet?
Something interesting from the police and both the police officers I spoke to said this is there is no group of people more likely to be arrested for this than any other. It can literally be anyone, any social class, any job, any background, bus drivers, lawyers, police, doctors. Something that struck me, a senior officer said to me, you're walking here into families where a man's been looking at child abuse. That family are often a nuclear happy family who've never had any interaction with the police in their lives. He said there's no hostility. Mm. And I actually found it quite upsetting to hear the way the police talk about the knot because they know how damaging it is. As one officer said, any adverse childhood experience you can think of, father's arrested, family's broken up, dad might go to jail, the dad becomes a suicide risk. We kick off several of them just arriving at that door.
Well, I took my kids to school the next day as if nothing had happened. So it was like on the outside, everything was the same, but my world had imploded.
Let's go back to Emma. Yeah, what happened in the hours and days after her ex was arrested?
So Ben was charged and then bailed overnight. So she was able to speak to him the next day. She said as soon as the kids were in school, she was on the phone to him saying, what's happened? But in her words, he started doing damage limitation immediately.
And he said, I have been watching a lot of porn lately because, you know, my world had fallen apart. I was depressed. I was drinking. You know,
he was down a dark alley.
Click, 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 click. And, you know, a couple of times I've clicked on things that I thought might have been a bit dodgy. So a bit dodgy, you think, well, you know, 16, 17-year-old girls. So I knew there was going to be something.
So a lot of the men who are arrested link the fact that they were watching abuse to their own porn habits. They make that link. They talk about going down a rabbit hole, starting to watch more and more extreme images, and finding themselves clicking on images of children being abused. Obviously, it's hugely controversial and highly debated to what extent these men are inherently paedophiles who would otherwise have been sexually attracted to children, whether the porn is desensitizing them and they would not otherwise have had that interest. What is incontrovertible is the link between habits of watching very extreme pornography and later being arrested for watching online child sex abuse.
I mean, how did Emma respond to that? Did she know that he was looking at these sorts of things online or looking at porn?
She knew that he watched porn, and actually, really interestingly, she points out that that wasn't a red flag to her because it is a normal behaviour for lots of men. She stressed that she had never watched porn, and she says, you know, we just established early on in our relationship, he did it, I didn't. And she said, you know, they were a couple who had grown apart. So she associated his porn habit just with their being in a failing relationship. And her words were, it wasn't a red flag to me. Without detailed information from the police, I had to take his word for it.
And then we had Children's Services come out, which is the only time that anybody, even now, has spoken independently to my children about their relationship with their dad.
Children's Services visited
not long,
within a few days and privately spoke to her children without her in the room. And she said that the social worker came out laughing and said, lovely children, I've got no doubts about them whatsoever. And while Children's Services were there, they repeated the words that had such an impact on her when the police said them to her. It was said to her yet again, you must keep this secret.
Because your children might find that they're not invited to play dates anymore. They might be excluded from class parties. Other mothers may question whether or not their children were safe when they were under your care with historical play dates. So she really strongly said, you know, keep this confidential.
And was Ben allowed to see his children?
So Ben was given supervised access. She agreed to that. She agreed to him seeing the children because in that moment, she felt that that was what she should do. Remembering she didn't know very much detail at all at that point about what he'd been charged with, whether or not he was going to be found guilty. She made the decision that she would help and facilitate him having supervised access.
He's their dad. They love their dad. You know, to completely eradicate him from our lives, not knowing whether or not there's anything to answer to. You know, I was a bit conflicted, but I just thought I need to know what I'm dealing with before I cut you out of my children's life.
This must have been a very difficult decision to make and so close to the knock happening. And then compounded by the fact that she couldn't confide in anyone, possibly ask for advice. What did Emma say to you about it when you spoke to her?
Well, she said that the intense fear of local judgment, of it hitting the local press, that was something she was very worried about.
So my hometown is that kind of place where, like, you're born there, you marry there, you die there. So we knew a lot of people, and there was a lady who lived on my street. And I thought to myself, what if her husband was accused of this? What would I say to her? But then I also imagine what she'd say to me. It would not have been, how are you? How to say
I'm
it
now or... trying to think what I would do or say.
Exactly.
If it happened to a neighbour.
Mother to mother, what on earth? How would you even approach that person? You know, if she said to me, how did you not know? And at that moment, I was thinking, how did I not know? He lived with me. How did I not see this? This was my safe space, my home, and he was committing this abhorrent crime under my roof. So I thought, if I'm asking myself the question, how did you not know? Logically, other people would be asking that of me. So I felt intensely judged.
Were you frightened?
Yeah. Yeah.
All the women talk about the incredible fear of their community finding out what's happened. We know, you know, from media coverage, this is one of the most stigmatized, taboo, horrific crimes. I spoke to other women than Emma, and they all talked about fear of the children being bullied, fear that they themselves would be targeted. So the women are terrified, depressed and unhappy and left home alone with no support and nobody to talk to. It's an incredibly difficult situation.
I was sitting on my sofa alone, a bit like that first night with the search warrant in front of me. I was sitting actually in the same place, in the same sofa, and just sat there and just thought, I cannot stay here. I have to move.
She actually made the decision quite quickly to leave the town she'd grown up in. She decided to just go.
How was it making friends?
All right, to begin with. It was quite easy, I suppose, to kind of create a dialogue that was acceptable. So fresh start away from my ex, and that's fine. But then when you look to start creating meaningful connections, deepen friendships, it kind of gets to a point that it's quite awkward. But I still think moving was the right thing to do for me because I wasn't coping with the isolation.
Coming up, Ben goes to court and Emma faces an unimaginable conversation with her children.
Harriet, Emma's ex, Ben, pled guilty to looking at those images and went to court. What happened?
There's often a long wait before the men appear in court, something that causes a huge amount of suffering for the women. And I spoke to a few women, all of whom mentioned that long wait to find out exactly what the man is accused of. Mothers are having to make safeguarding decisions about their children and about how much time and contact they should have with their dad, while being often left in the dark about the exact nature of what the offences they're charged with.
It feels like you're living in limbo. Some ladies with children are still waiting after 3 years. Me, I was lucky. It was a matter of months. And it was at that point that the information was in the public domain and the lead officer could tell me. And then it felt like the knock all over again because I discovered that he'd been accessing images and there was over 1,000 images and they were in all three categories. That was a pattern of behaviour that, as far as I was concerned, was established. Like,
how did
you
feel about him?
Prison. Really angry. I just disgusted that he'd done that. But it was still like, you know, I'd still been seeing him every week when he was with the kids. And it was still really hard to kind of put together the crime that he'd pleaded guilty for in Crown Court and the man that I married and the father of my children. But they are one of the same. And that's really difficult because, you know, he was so normal with the kids.
Did you go to court?
No, I couldn't face it. Because I didn't want to hear the charges in a public place for the first time and have people watching how I react when they read them out. I just thought that would be so humiliating. I couldn't face it. So because of the fear of humiliation and the fear of media coverage, I didn't attend. And I really regret that.
Did Emma's ex go to prison?
No, he didn't. Because she wasn't in court and didn't hear the judges summing up, she doesn't know the exact details even now why he didn't go to prison, but she believes it's because he wasn't sharing images and he wasn't actively contacting other men and looking for images. He was placed on the sex offenders register for a few years. He's now off that register. And actually one of Emma's points is, what does it mean and what does it mean when you come off it? A lack of monitoring of these individuals was brought up by a lot of the families.
Harriet, do Emma's children know what their dad did?
Yes, and actually that was a really interesting conversation with her, was hearing how she'd come to try and tell them gently and in an age-appropriate way, and it took her a while to work up the courage to do it.
Finding the words for disclosure really worried me, because I thought, what if I get it wrong? Like, would they go on the internet and search what type of image their dad looked at? And then that makes them an offender as well. You know, would they get teased? Would they fear that they had the same predilection as him? You know, that's the other thing. Hundreds of questions. And no one to help me.
That's a really enormous amount of information and complex information to give to children.
Because I thought they're going to need to know what sex is, understand what pornography is, understand about consent. And then, only then, could I tell them what their dad had done.
You weren't signposted to counselling for them?
Nothing.
Counselling for you?
Or for me. There's absolutely nothing, because we're just family. So I've looked into this quite a bit. Unfortunately, we're not considered victims on the victims code. And because of that, we can't access any funding.
But she took advice from a charity who worked with children of prisoners, and she did tell them.
And it was completely the right thing to do. The advantage of telling children young is really good, because they're more likely to turn to you for answers.
And she said the children took it reasonably well.
There is fear of what they're hearing and what it means to them and what he means to them. But they're certainly not taking that out on him. It's very much directed at me at the moment.
Did Emma continue to let her kids see their dad?
She did. And I think it's a decision she's always found difficult. And he's only ever had supervised access. He doesn't have them overnight or alone.
You know, I've done my research and it's better for a child to know their parents for the good and the bad. If you look at everybody having light and dark in them and every colour in between, you know, my ex-husband's dark is much, much darker than I ever thought it could be. But it doesn't mean he's all dark. He's got some light as well. And my children have been given the opportunity to know the whole of him. So he may have done a monstrous thing and they are genetically half him, but they're not half monster. They are amazing little people in their own right. And that, you know, their father doesn't make them who they are.
Do you think that nurturing their understanding of complexity in his character will help them deal with the fact that their father was a sex offender later in life?
I hope so. It's all I had. I had to go through so much soul searching myself. I married a man capable of that. What's that say about me? So they're going to have to somehow become comfortable with the crime that their father committed.
What impact do you think all of this has had on her? You know, speaking to her, how could you see that this has impacted on her?
Something that really strikes me about Emma talking to her is that this is a woman who's still really traumatised, really deeply affected in her day-to-day life. And I spoke to Rachel Armitage at Huddersfield University. She's a professor of criminology. She's carried out research into this and she estimates from work she's done with the police, there's around 300 families with children going through this knock every month in England and Wales. And that would be 10 families a day. And if you think there's 2-3 children, possibly, these are really large numbers of children. And what she's seeing as outcomes is that 69% of family members she interviewed had severe PTSD just from the experience of the knock.
It's had a profound effect on my life. It's impacted every parental decision I've made, where we live, relationships, friendships, which school they attend, everything. Yeah, and it's been tough. And now I think I feel as lonely in my current town as I feared I would in my hometown, just because my world keeps shrinking and it's because of him. And that's really tough.
You feel you've suffered for what he did?
Yeah.
Harriet, what Emma and her family have been through is extraordinary. What does she think now might have made things a bit easier for her and for her kids?
So Emma's become a bit of a campaigner on this issue, actually, as have some of the other women I've spoken to. They've become advocates for families and children affected by the knock and all that comes after it. And she felt quite abandoned by social services. She felt she was left to make all these complex decisions and she would like there to be more guidance on this and more professional input.
I personally think that families with young children should have some sort of family liaison officer within the police. Stop just treating us as a tick box exercise. Actually acknowledge that my children are vulnerable and they deserve support.
What has your reporting made you think about how we as a society think about people who look at indecent images and how we deal with that?
I think the first thing is that we have to bring this out into the light. I think we all need to be aware of what a massive, huge crisis we have in terms of the vast number of children being abused and that material and images of them then being shared online. And then what I've sort of seen through this story is that long tail of harm. Families are being shattered. And something I know that Emma wanted to do is to try and reduce some of the stigma that attaches to children and wives of these offenders. And she's speaking out.
I think it's the acceptance that it could happen to anybody. And I think at the moment it feels like so taboo and something that happens to other people, not us. It won't happen to us. Well, you know, it happened to my family. I don't think society's ready to accept the fact that child sexual abuse can enter any home in the UK if it's got internet access. That's not a nice thought. And your world can implode like that when they knock on the door.
Harriet, thank you very much.
No, thank you very much for having me on.
That was Harriet Grant. You can read her article based on Emma's story called The Knock That Tears Families Apart at theguardian.com. It is part of the Rights and Freedom series, which reports on human rights abuses and elevates the voices of those fighting for justice. If you've been affected by anything we've talked about in today's podcast, you can contact Samaritans on 116 123, or you can email joe@samaritans.org. And if you are worried that a child you know is at risk from abuse or you need some advice, contact the NSPCC. Their website is nspcc.org.uk and their helpline number is 0808 800 5000. That's it for today. Thank you to Harriet and to Emma for speaking to us. This episode was produced by Rose Delarabiti and me. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Lucy Greenwell, Phil Maynard, and Archie Bland. We'll be back tomorrow.